This week's episode of Shauna Renee's Fab Life is being brought to you by Podcast Pros, where we take the guesswork out of creating powerful audio content that motivates, sells, and inspires. We've got a bunch of online content on the way, plus we're offering one-on-one coaching and online summer workshops. Find out more by following us on social media, Facebook and Twitter at Podcast Pros. That's Podcast P-R-O-S-E. And now on to the show. Hello, darlings, and welcome to Shauna Renee's Fab Life. Of course, I am Shauna Renee. Glad to be here with you again this week. This is going to be a pretty fast, quick and hurry show, only because the hubby just got home from out of town and I've got to go and be a good wife. But I want to talk about a couple of things, but before I do that, I'm just hoping that everyone had a wonderful weekend and a marvelous Monday. Of course, on Sunday, the United States of America and other places around the world perhaps celebrated Father's Day. And I really enjoyed seeing all of your posts on Facebook, especially, and Instagram, photographs of you and your dad, or photographs of the dads and the kids. And usually on both Mother's Day and Father's Day, I try to post something, a celebration of a father in my life. And I had this idea. I wanted to post something on Sunday and I ended up not going through with it. And I guess a few of you all noticed, because on Monday morning, I literally got a couple of messages like, you guys do some really strange things in my inbox, like messages like, I didn't see you and you didn't wish me a happy Father's Day and I wished you a happy Mother's Day. And I was really surprised to see that you didn't post anything. I was waiting to see some pictures of you and Joe. And, you know, here's the thing. Our family celebrated Father's Day on Saturday because my father's birthday was also Friday. And I think my sister may have posted a few pictures, but you know, I just made the conscious decision that it was a family thing and that every family event that we have doesn't necessarily need to be made available to the public. So that's why I didn't post anything. You all know my dad and who he is, and you know that I love him. And so I don't necessarily need to go online to prove it. Sometimes I just feel inspired to do so, and other times I don't. And in the past, I've decided to celebrate my son's father. I think that that's appropriate because he is his dad and he does the best that he can. But this year, I was thinking a lot about stepdads or bonus dads, granddads, godfathers, coaches, teachers, mentors, big brothers, men who step in, or if they're not stepping in like to replace or fill a void, they're at least supplementing fathering for children who may need it. And so I wanted to post something in celebration of them, because I believe that all men who have taken on the responsibility of bringing up a child in one way or another deserve to be celebrated. But I was a bit hesitant because I didn't want biological fathers who may or may not be in their child's life or their children's life for a variety of reasons to feel some kind of way. Because the truth is, there are a lot of men who are not in their biological children's life. And it's interesting because we see and we hear a lot of that on Father's Day on social media, right? I always say, like, on Mother's Day, and I think all of you notice this too, Mother's Day, you get one or two posts, like one of two. You get, oh, here's my mom, she's my best friend, I love her to death. Or you get posts from folks who have lost their mothers and say, you know, this is a really hard day for me because I miss my mom. Occasionally, you will get posts from people who don't necessarily have the best relationships with their mothers, but those are few and far between. But it is Father's Day when things are like exponentially more complex, right? Of course, you have the my dad's the best. You have I've lost my dad and I'm sad. But then you have, you know, I wish I had a better relationship with my dad, but alas, it didn't happen. And you have like people who are outright angry, like, you know, my sperm donor is whack and I'm not celebrating him. And then you have, of course, the women, you know, the father of my child is no longer around or is not around. And so I'm the dad. And then you have the men who are like going after the women, like, this isn't about you. So don't wish single mothers a happy Father's Day, which I happen to totally agree with. I don't like that at all. But anyway, it's so complex and complicated and convoluted and all over the place that sometimes I just feel like, you know what, I don't even want to get involved in this. And the reason it's complex, I mean, there's so many different reasons for why it is complex. I think one of the more interesting posts that I saw on social media this year, and I think I've probably seen it over the last couple of years, because it was a New York Times op-ed piece written by Charles M. Blow. And it was written, I think, back in 2015, if I'm not mistaken. And in this, he talks about the fact that society would have us believe that fathers, black fathers in particular, are missing, are doing a terrible job at parenting. And he cites a chapter in this book called All Is Written. It's a book written by Josh Leves, I think is his name, that points out that most black fathers are actually living with their children, right? But then you're like, oh, but we hear these statistics that say like over 70% of children of color are born to single mothers. And that is true. But what these statistics fail to cite, or these reports fail to cite, is that black fathers are more likely to cohabitate rather than marry the women that they have children with. So that is part of the reason why we talk about single mothers in terms of not being married. But for years we've said, just because a woman is not married to the man that she has a child with doesn't mean that that child is growing up in a single family or a single parent household. They're just not married. So it's really complex. And I think a lot of times black men who are really doing the best that they can to parent their children feel they get frustrated. And I totally understand it. I would be frustrated too if you're doing everything, but yet no one seems to acknowledge it, you know? And so again, I don't ever want to contribute to that. And then of course, you know, this article, which again was just so fascinating, I think I'll post it, goes on to talk about how millions of people, or not millions, but, you know, quite a few fathers are separated from their children for a variety of reasons, again, that we don't discuss. Some of them are separated from their children because they have multiple children by multiple women. And so they can only live in one house at a time. So while they're living with one child, they may not be living with another one. I think we can't have this conversation without acknowledging the fact that we're losing black men at a alarming rate. So a lot of them are no longer with us. Also, incarceration is a huge deal. In fact, speaking of dads, I read a really interesting article in Time Magazine. Again, it was an op-ed piece written by Sean Carter, aka Jay-Z, who decided for Father's Day he was going to take on the bail industry. And in this piece he wrote that he knew that millions of people are being separated from their families for months at a time, not because they are convicted of committing crimes, but because they are accused of committing crimes. And you may remember the Khalif Browder story. Apparently Jay-Z helped produce that show, and it's heartbreaking, just heartbreaking. I know the story. I've read about Khalif Browder's story. I had no intention of seeing the movie because I can't absorb that kind of stuff and then go on with my life. Like, that stays with me. But I know the story very well. This young man was accused of stealing a backpack, and he was only 17 years old. And because his parents could not, or his family could not, afford his bail, he was forced to sit in prison, an adult prison, Rikers Island prison, for years in solitary confinement and eventually got out. I mean, eventually they found that they had no evidence that this young man stole this backpack and he got out, but he was forever changed by the experience that he ended up committing suicide. And so Jay-Z said that he was obsessed with the story and the injustice of what he calls the profitable bail bond industry. I mean, again, this young man's family, as well as other families, just too poor to post bond. And so what ends up happening is either these young men and women are stuck in jail until either they're brought to trial or someone gets the money. And if they get the money, it's usually through some kind of predatory lending or bail scheme. So it's usually like you've got to sign over your whole life. And then the families end up going into debt or even deeper debt. So it's just ugly across the board. So what Jay-Z decided he was going to do for the 400,000 people who on any day are convicted of no crime, but still held in jail. He said he was going to work with a number of organizations that aim to support families by helping them find money. Southerners on New Ground, Color of Change. They all do this work. They did this work on Mother's Day. Jay-Z said he was going to support them in doing the work on Father's Day. And I thought that was a good idea. I was really happy to hear that. And again, it wasn't something that, you know, I saw on any of the hip hop blogs or any of the gossip blogs. I mean, this was in Time Magazine. This was on Time.com. So I just want to remind folks, especially those of you who like to say that, you know, celebrities don't do anything. Celebrities don't give back. Celebrities this, that, and the other. You know, sometimes you may need to diversify your news sources because the stories are there and they're doing things and they may not necessarily, you know, jump up on stage and scream it or scream it from the mountaintop, but work is still being done. So again, as we get back to the subject of what's really going on in our families and especially with our fathers, we've got to acknowledge the fact that sometimes it's not because they don't want to be there, but sometimes it's because the system is set up in such a way that they cannot be there. And, you know, this is another important factor to consider. Also, this is another story that I just saw today. Someone posted it today. I don't know how new this is. But the Michigan House of Representatives, the State House of Representatives, passed a bill that would require judges to award joint legal custody of children to divorcing parents. See, apparently the state found that custody arrangements were not being made based upon the kind of parent one is, but instead it was based on what the judge thought was appropriate. And so if a judge had a bias, and we do know when it comes to custody and child support and such, there is a bias against the men toward the women. So if a judge had a bias, of course, the women would be granted sole custody, legal or physical or both. And the fathers would be given visitation. But because the fathers did not have custody, any kind of custody, of course, they were on the hook for child support. So the state wants to change that. What the state is essentially saying is that they know that children, especially of divorced parents. So this seems to me, from what I read, to be a ruling that affects divorcing parents. So I don't know if this is going to extend to parents who are in court but were not married, right? So you have a child out of wedlock and you're trying to determine who gets custody and child support and all that. I'm not sure if it extends to them. But anyway, what the House says, and by the way, this was brought by a Republican representative. And what they essentially found was that they believe that children do better when they have both parents actively involved in their life. And that's why they believe that joint custody is the best idea. However, there's some opposition to the bill. It's coming from judges and advocates against domestic violence who are concerned about abuse and also whether or not the logistics of moving children between two households would cause them to feel lost. Now, for anyone who has ever been in that place, you understand that. Or for maybe anyone who has a child that moves back and forth. I mean, I remember growing up, even though my mother had custody of me, my dad lived a mile away. I mean, my father for many years lived in the same neighborhood. So even though I didn't go back and forth like every week, I could go back and forth as often as I wanted to. I mean, he was literally within walking distance of my home. And, you know, I always felt like the house that my mother lived in was my home, and that my dad's house was my dad's house. So I didn't feel lost necessarily. But again, that's because they didn't have joint custody. There was no arrangement necessarily that said, OK, Tuesday, Thursday, weekends here. My son, however, he and my ex-husband, his father, do have an arrangement, though it's not a court-ordered arrangement, but he does go back and forth on a regular basis. And sometimes I do worry about whether or not he doesn't feel secure. But I've also noticed that it's not just the back and forth that either helps him, that throws him off, if he's ever thrown off. A lot of times it's just the not knowing. And I think that more than wanting to necessarily be in one place at one time, and that really does all depend on your child's personality. But more than that, I think the certainty, the knowing, the structure, if you will, is really what children crave. So if a child knows that on Tuesday, Thursdays, and Saturday and Sundays, they're going to be in one place, and then Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, they're going to be in another place, after a while, they become used to it. And it becomes just part of their routine. And the younger the child is after the parents divorce, or if the parents have never been together after they separate, the easier it is for them to fall into a rhythm that just feels natural for them, because they don't know anything else. Now, for older children, it is a bit complicated, which is why this bill does take into consideration children who are over 16 and who they want to live with. So a child over 16 can state a preference, and the judge has to weigh that. He has to weigh it with I think it's given substantial weight, is how it's described. Now, you know, there's two sides to that coin. On one hand, it gives the child the ability to say, I'd rather be here or not. But if you've got an ugly divorce happening, it puts the child in the middle of something that has absolutely nothing to do with them. So I don't know if as a 16-year-old, I would have wanted to be put in a position where I had to choose one or the other. So that can be kind of complicated. And that's what some of the opponents are saying as well. Now, I think it's also important to mention with this arrangement that if there is a preponderance of evidence of domestic violence or abuse in that family, then the judge is not required to order joint custody. So there's that. Now, a preponderance of evidence, that again, shaky ground. What does that mean? How much evidence do you need? You know, what one person may consider to be just regular old discipline to another parent can be considered abuse. I mean, we've talked about those stories for years and years and years. So again, a slippery slope. Now, here's the other thing. This arrangement could also reduce the child support burden on the non-custodial parent, because once you have joint custody, your child support payments will decrease, because the number of hours or overnights that your child spends with you increases. And it's actually a good thing. I think all the way around, that's a good thing, because what children need more than money is time, right? So you get to spend more time, and then the non-custodial parent then is in a better position to determine how that money is spent. And that's a lot easier sometimes if you know how to manage your money than it is just like writing a check. And sometimes those checks can be burdensome. I mean, just depending on what your lifestyle is like. But what opponents, again, are afraid of is that a parent will benefit from the decrease in child support, but just will decide not to spend equal amount of time with the child. And so here's the thing. When I hear people talk about this, and when I hear people get angry about it, and they're mad about it, and they oppose it, and I understand the whole notion of being able to the whole notion of being afraid that an abusive parent may have joint custody of a child. I get that. So let's put that aside. I totally understand why people might be concerned about that and opposed to it. But the one thing that I don't like sometimes that we do as opponents of anything that has to do with the financial burden being taken off of the non-custodial parent, or even just any discussion when it comes to the non-custodial parent, which is generally the man, the father, is that we just have this idea that, like, automatically, you know, they are just not going to take responsibility. And a lot of that is projection. Some of it is true. Now, I'm not going to sit here and diminish or pretend that there are not women who are not fighting, struggling to get the men that they've had children with take responsibility. But I really want to believe that more often than not, men want to take responsibility and they want to be part of their children's lives, but situations, circumstances, life, and all kinds of other things just prevent them from doing it in a way that may be satisfactory to the mother or may even be satisfactory to the man. So I think that we have to begin to look when it comes to the way we parent children and when it comes to the way that we structure our families, we have to begin to look for other ways. And that begins with just a shift in the way that we think. And that shift I have found starts with not allowing other people to project their experiences and their fears, ideas, and opinions onto you. Because I can't tell you how many women I've talked to who have said, you know, well, after a divorce or after a breakup with a child's father, oh, well, you know, now this is going to be difficult and this is going to be challenging and he's just going to be like all the rest of them and I got baby daddy drama and all this stuff. And I'm always like, okay, but look, you know, I can sit here and commiserate with you about how difficult it is. But the truth is right now, we got to figure this out. So rather than just assume that he's not going to do the right thing and just throw our hands up or just sit around and complain, we're going to have to find a solution. Now, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you, for the brothers who are listening, I know that you don't necessarily want to hear this, but sometimes, you know, you do either have to get the courts involved or sometimes you just got to put your foot down. You got to dig your heels in. You got to cuss a little bit and just say, look, you know, I understand you've got responsibilities and a job and all this other stuff, but I have responsibilities and a job as well. In fact, that was one of the things that opponents of this this bill also said in Michigan. They said, well, you know, it would having joint custody of a child would prevent the parent from being able to go out there and find a job and work. And I'm like, really? Really? What? So what? I mean, if one parent has custody of the child, unless that parent is not working full custody of that child, don't you think that would create even more of a burden on them to try to figure out how to get a job and keep a job? Let me tell you, as a custodial parent, you know what I mean? As a parent with custody, I can tell you it's right down difficult, downright difficult, excuse me, to figure that out. So, I mean, I just sit there sometimes and wonder, God, I wish I didn't have to worry about somebody Monday through Friday. I wish I didn't have to worry about taking them to school Monday through Friday, but I do. So, you know, not having to do that 2-3 days a week, not having to do or deal with the weekend, it makes it easier. So, yeah, it may be a little more complicated on the other parent, but it takes the burden off one, so it equals it out. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I also want to say that in this law, too, a parent is prohibited from moving more than 80 miles away from the other parent, I guess, without permission. I don't necessarily like that, but, you know, one has to do what one has to do for children. But anyway, as I was saying before I got into that, I think we really do have to stop allowing other people to project their ideas and opinions on us. And we really have to begin to think about other ways in which we can create families and villages and communities around our children. And I was having this conversation with a friend of mine and the idea of like communal living came up. So you remember when I mentioned the New York Times op-ed and they said that one of the reasons why dads are not living with their children is because you have fathers who have children by multiple women and they can only live in one house at one time. And so we were discussing this before I thought about, you know, how I wanted to present on the podcast. And he said, well, I mean, the solution to that is a communal / polygamous style way of living where you've got the man at the center and then the women and the children just kind of all live together. And I know when it comes to polygamy and polyamory and all of these other non-monogamous relationship situations, we don't like these things. We don't like to talk about them. We don't like to even discuss them as possibilities. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, you know, if you've got a man who's got four children by four different women, I mean, he doesn't necessarily have to sleep with them all. Like, he doesn't have to be in relationship with them all. And they don't necessarily have to be in an exclusive relationship with him. But wow, wouldn't it be kind of awesome if they did find a way to create a community together so that the women could support each other, the children who are brothers and sisters could get to know each other, and then they could all be with their father. It sounds crazy. I'm not saying it's something I would agree to, but it might just work, or it might just be worth considering. Again, that's not to say that he gets to jump off and sleep with all of them. See, I think that's where a lot of people get lost. Oh, well, if we're living in a community, then I get to sleep with her. No, you don't have to. That's not your right. But you do have a responsibility to be around all of your children. And this gives you an opportunity to do this. And again, it gives everyone else an opportunity to build a community. And cultures all over the world do it. So something to consider. So anyway, I say all that to say that Father's Day and fatherhood in certain communities, Black and brown communities, is complex and complicated. And it's not just because men are irresponsible. It's not just because men don't want to be held accountable. Sure, that's it. But you know, there are women who don't want to take responsibility or be held accountable as well. But we cannot ever and should not ever have a discussion about fatherhood in the Black and brown community without talking about the way society is structured and how it impacts us. And we haven't even began to skim the surface in these last 30 minutes. And I really don't have a lot of time to get into it. Perhaps this will be a multi-part series that we'll do later on in the year. But I just wanted to take this podcast to say happy Father's Day, and to celebrate all of the dads, the biological dads who are in the home with their children, the biological dads who are doing the best that they can to father their children, despite whatever their circumstances may be, the grandfathers who have stepped in to be father figures, the stepdads or bonus dads who decided and made a choice, because I know we like to say that, oh, remember, there was a radio host who shall remain nameless who said, it's unnatural for a man to want to take care of another man's kids. That's just, ladies, you just got to understand, that is not natural. That is not something that a man wants to do. That is not something that a man can really do. If you find a man that will actually do that, you have found an extraordinary man, because most men can't do that. Bullshit. All men can do it. And quite a few men choose to do it. If a man chooses not to do it, it's not because he can't. It's because he has just made the choice not to. So for the men who have chosen to step in and care for, protect, provide for a child that may not necessarily be biologically his, I celebrate and salute you. And for the men who do it sometimes in a way that takes them away from their own children, I know that's complicated. I know that's hard, but I still salute you, because you realize that you can father this one or father that one, but whoever you're fathering, you're still doing something very important for the community. To the coaches who step in, I have so many male friends who are have known over the years, who tell stories about their football coach or their baseball coach or their basketball coach, who was like a father figure to them, to the big brothers and the mentors. Just thank you. I celebrate you. So no, I didn't get an opportunity to do it on Facebook or on Twitter or Instagram, but I did get an opportunity, or I'm taking the opportunity to do it here. So I'm a couple days late, but happy Father's Day. And honestly, the way I look at it, there shouldn't be just one day to celebrate fathers. It should be something that we do all year long, just like we should be celebrating moms all year long. So with that, I got to get out of here. We're almost up on 30 minutes. Thank you so much for tuning in once again this week. We'll be back next week. And don't forget, if you want to get in on this podcast game, I'm doing a whole lot of work this summer to help aspiring podcasters and storytellers get their podcast on Podcast Pros is where you need to go on Facebook and Twitter to find out more about it. I spell pros, P-R-O-S-E. So that's podcast, P-R-O-S-E. We'll be teaching classes in and around Washington, D.C. I'll be doing some workshops around Detroit later on in the fall, and I'm doing one-on-one coaching. So check me out. And in the meantime, as I remind you every single week, it is so important that we take care of ourselves, but most important, we need to take care of each other. So until we speak again, peace.